Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and all major podcast providers. So if you can't catch the show live, you can download it or simply use our free podcast player, which is available on our website at www.theorganicview.com. If you'd like to connect with us, please post a question on our wall on Facebook or send me a tweet at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@theorganicview.com. Today's show is sponsored by Austria's Finest Naturally Authentic Pumpkin Seeds and Pumpkin Seed Oil from the Steiermark, available at organicuniverse.com. Listeners of The Organic View can receive $1 off their purchase by using the coupon code ORGVIEW. That's ORGVIEW. For other promotional offers, please visit theorganicview.com's website. On today's show, I have the pleasure of welcoming America's favorite Rosarian, Susan Fox, who is otherwise known in the rose community as Gaga. She's going to share her secrets for pruning roses. So I'd like to welcome to the show Susan Fox. Good afternoon, Susan, and so great to have you back. I really am enjoying all my time with you.
Good afternoon, June.
For new listeners, as well as people who are not familiar with your work, especially since you are an award-winning rosarian, can you share a little bit about yourself with their listeners?
I have been growing roses for many years, and most recently I had roses, as many people know. I had over 200 roses in Texas, and then I was showing roses, and I wrote about roses, and I started a website where I would work with people that would write in about how to grow roses, and I became a consulting rosarian. And part of the creed of being a consulting rosarian is you are dedicated in perpetuating growing the rose any way that you can, and working with people in the education that growing roses is easier than people may think. And so when I moved to Illinois, I wanted to put in, we have 3 acres, and I wanted to start, I had to start over. And a lot of people, that's very difficult. Any time in your life, it's difficult. So I started in with the stages of rose garden, and I started writing about it. So I've put in all new rose beds here in Illinois, and have managed to, it's pretty hard to believe, just since 2011, that these rose gardens are all new. So I've also written a book and a little on how to grow roses, a monthly guide to rose care. And I just continue to, now I'm working with the Chicago Flower and Garden Show, and we will have 2 rose gardens for people to come with docents and volunteers from the American Rose Society to answer any questions that any of your viewers that might attend how to grow roses. So that's what I'm doing right now.
Well, the key thing is constant education and letting people know that anybody can grow roses. Whether they are successful is another story, which is exactly why we're doing today's show. So many people have written in asking, you know, can you do a show with Susan about proper pruning? And it's amazing when you think about it. If you go to get a haircut, you're not going to use toenail clippers to give yourself a new hairdo. And in the same token, you're not going to want to use an axe to trim your roses. So pruning is a very critical part of maintaining a healthy garden. You also have to know what you're doing, and you have to use the proper tools. I am horrified when I see people whip out a pair of anvil shears to do pruning, and I just can't understand what they're thinking, much less who sold them those shears, because, as you know, they cause so much damage to the plant specimen, and it just amazes me time after time when I'm working with the public how I see people that are using the wrong tools. So I'm glad that we have this opportunity today, Susan. Now, before we begin, can you talk about the parts of the rose bush so people can understand what it is that they're looking for?
Well, you have, of course, the parts of the rose bush that are above ground. You know, you have the, you've got your, the parts of the flower. You have the petals, the stamens, the stigma. You know, all the parts that are going to compose your flower. You know, the sepal, the corolla, but all of these things cannot form unless that you have the cane, and your cane is actually the branch. It's what's going to be growing from a strong root system, and that when you are, when we get to the pruning part, that's where you're going to prune your plant, and that's going to be coming above where the bud union is. And if you're working on a grafted plant or a budded plant, for a rose, is a modern rose is a budded plant. And that is a plant that has been grafted onto a on a the, a new a root system. Then that cane is going to grow above ground, and that's where any of your roses, all of your roses, are going to spring from. And that's all above ground. And I tell you that because we have to have a little humor as we go here, because if you're buying bare root plants, and I've did a little class for my little students, and I had many of them in Texas that started rose gardens, and just now picture in my your mind a bare root rose, and I didn't say too much about it, and I had a student that planted a bare root rose upside down because the root system didn't look fit. So now you see, I said, be sure that you plant the roots below the ground and have those straggly parts that look more like a woody cane, that goes above the ground if you're buying a bare root plant. And that's strictly, I'm telling you all that for humor, because the roots go below the ground. And the bud union is that knobby part that looks, you can see it. That's where the plant, when you're grafting that rose, the hybridized rose has been grafted into the root system, and you can see it very distinctly. And depending in what part of the country you live in, you're going to determine how far above ground that you want that, because for protection from the cold.
Thank you. I think that's such a delightful story, and it's always interesting when you get together with somebody who really loves what they do and they have all sorts of stories to share. When it comes to some of the canes, I'm just curious, what do you do if you happen to have more of an invasive species type where the rose is just kind of taking over? Do you have any suggestions for something like that? Maybe I'm getting a little ahead of what we're talking about today, but that's always been a problem for me, because it seems as though every year I discover new roses that are on the border of my property that seem to want to just take over.
Well, then I think you know exactly what I'm talking about, because the rose that's left unpruned, it really becomes a tangle of bramble, and then that bramble produces small and inferior blooms. So I really believe that you develop an eye, and it takes training, June. When I first, and that's why I recommend that people do join their local rose club or a rose society, because I actually had to learn how to see. And it wasn't a natural thing in how to see the plant. Or when people first began to tell me to prune the rose in the shape of a vase or a vase, I'm like, what do you mean? Do you see, I just want your listening audience to understand that, no, that's not always easy, that you develop, as anything worth doing, that you develop the ability to see the vase or see the shape. So you don't just walk out and say, oh, okay, I know how this is supposed to look, or you learn as you go. So you learn your plant. So if it's just a tangle and a bramble, you stand back and you see how that plant, how you feel that it should look. And the first thing that you definitely want to do is that you want to take out when you're pruning that, take out your non-productive or damaged wood, and you leave a few good canes and the healthy canes, and you'll be able to see that. But I've got to back up here because no pruning story is complete without this. The first thing you need to do is go to either plantmap.com or go to the USDA Plant Hardiness website. They're free, and put in your zip code, put in your zip code and determine what is your plant hardiness zone. Because I would rather tell you right now that you say, you know what, Susan told me to prune late rather than early, because learn from my mistake. Remember, I grew up in the north, really north. So when I moved to Texas, it was just like someone dropped me in Mars. I may as well have to learn how to grow roses in Mars compared to northern Illinois. So,
yeah, it's very important, especially since there are people that are advising others, and they're located in different parts of the country or even different parts of the world. I'm located in New York. I think we're either zone 6 or 7.
Exactly.
I should know. But I do know one thing when it comes to taking advice. I've learned from so many different professionals that I've worked with. They are very quick to say, you know, if you're outside the area, you really have to do things according to the zone that you're located in. So that's a really important bit of information. Now, one of the things that I am always concerned about, Susan, is whether or not I'm removing too much of the old woody canes. Like if I'm pruning, how do you know if you're cutting too far down? Because sometimes, I've heard from some rose growers that depending upon the specific rose, they might cut back quite a bit just because that when they're cutting, the new growth almost gives it a jump start. So how do you know?
Well, first of all, and this is something that don't realize it, first of all, on your climbers, a lot of people think, oh, you know, you got to get out there and just cut all those climbers down. No, don't go cutting down your climbers. Your climbers, you don't want to cut for the first 2 or 3 years. You've got to establish mature canes, because just like a lot of you probably heard, and you know, our mothers and these gardeners that were around a long time, this is what my mother taught me, and it's true. Climbers bloom on mature wood, and that is a fact. So you can see some of that wood on your climber is dead wood. I mean, if it's dead, it's dead. But you better be sure, because dead wood is not green and pithy. It's alive inside. So you really have to inspect this. So you can cut out on the ramblers. And those once blooming climbers, you cut them after flowering. But most climbers, you know, you've got to wait until after they bloom. And you're going to see spectacular blooms because, you know, the climbers are bought to fill the space. You know, they fill large spaces. So that's where you go by these homes where those roses have been, the old garden roses, and you see a whole side of a yard or a side of a building that's filled. And then the old garden roses, like the Bourbons and Portlands, China roses, each of those do require somewhat different prunings, the hybrid perpetuals. That's after the plant blooms. Then you just cut back the main shoots. So with your old garden roses and your climbers, I would err on the side of allowing them to bloom and then prune them. So err on the side of caution for your pruning your climbers and old garden roses. But on like the damasks and the albas, you know, you can remove your twiggy growth. You know, use some common sense. You can see if it looks really bad and you just don't like the looks of it. But just remember that phrase. My mother told it to me, that your climbers, they bloom on old wood.
When I work with other master gardeners, especially the novices, I am sometimes frustrated because they're very quick to make decisions that you can't really undo. So having said that, what if you do cut off too much? What then?
You know, they do grow back. That's what I always say.
This is true, but it's horrible, though. I've sat there and I've cringed. I'm like, what are you doing? But sometimes when you're working with people, that's how they learn when they make the mistakes. And it's a little frustrating, but it does happen. So having said that,
you know,
what do you do, Susan? Do you get some fake plastic roses? I don't know.
Well,
do you hide
it? That's what I was going to about this rule of thumb. That's why you really have to I did write a blog post, and I called it Post-President's Day Pruning Trauma, you know, the PPTSD, because I was in Texas, and in February, you can get 80-degree days, and so it had been just wonderful, and I went with that President's Day ruling, and I bought 14 new roses, and I pruned the roses, and I went away to California and came back. And it had dropped to 8 degrees, and I lost every single one of the new roses, and all of them died, and I had to completely reprune everything. Now, the established roses came back, and I just had to prune them again, but the new roses, I lost them. So, again, start with going and finding out what your zone is, and then err on the side of caution. And I did learn a trick that I can tell everyone out there. If you start getting nice days and you just get the itch and you think, I just can't stand it, I've got to get my convertible loppers and I've got to get out there and do things, start removing slowly some of your debris. And I started pruning in areas of the garden that were protected. So I went on the side of the house that was not going to get the north wind. So go into areas where you still have protection, and then you won't have to worry, and then ease into your pruning. Or if you go ahead and you start pruning, then you're going to have to cover it up. Because if you start pruning, the minute you start to prune, that signals to your plant that it's time to start regenerating new growth.
Yeah.
Then you're going to have to go back out and do re-winter protect it.
See, what I'm concerned about is if you go out there prematurely, and with the weather being so crazy as it is, I have a colleague in Colorado who's telling me that he's had 70-degree temperatures. Here in New York, it's in the teens. It just does not make any sense. They're having the type of weather that I would like right now. We're still in the heart of winter. So what do you do if that happens, where Mother Nature plays a trick on you, and all of a sudden you find yourself dealing with another cold cold spell? Do you then
you've got to go back out and protect it?
Yeah,
you've got to do it again. I mean, I've had to do that. If I've pruned the roses and I've got them all ship-shape and ready to go, I go back out and I take straw, have something easy, or take mulch and just cover them up. Or, you know, some people use I don't know what they're called, those things you turn upside down. It looks like a flower pot. But I've never used those. I just take straw or something and pile them on top of it, because you're going to have to protect them. Because I'm telling you, it's just disastrous. I mean, because that tender growth, as soon as that warm spring air, your plant is exposed to it, then they really start generating new growth. And those tender shoots are particularly vulnerable to cold. And just like you, June, do you know it was 70 1 week ago Sunday, and it is going to be, I heard the wind chill factor is going to be minus 10 here. And our ground here in Central Illinois, I'm zone 6B also, it's not frozen. And now we had a blizzard, and that's the most harmful effect. It's not severe cold, it's the warming and the cooling.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and then back to the cuts, of course, if we're talking about the pruning, you want to do nice, clean, as you said. You want to use you asked me before, I think, what I like. I love the convertible loppers because inevitably I don't have the loppers. I may have topped my roses, and this new lopper, it folds back to a pruner, and they cost $39, and I'm down on my hands and knees, and then I see those dead canes, and I can just I've got a lopper and pruner in one, so they're just a wonderful and handy tool. And I also like a saw. It's like a long, straight saw that you can accurately remove canes without knocking off a basal break. So they come in handy also.
Now, is it true that after you make the cut, you're supposed to put a drop of white glue to ensure that there's a quick recovery? One of the master gardeners that I know had mentioned that. Is that something that you recommend? Or what is your trick?
I used, with over 200 and like 25 roses, I used to use a couple of bottles of Elmer's glue, and I faithfully sealed every cane. And then I started reading a lot of people's opinion about that, and some people said, oh, you really need to, and then others didn't. And then I started just sealing really large canes. And, you know, June, now I've stopped doing it, and then sometimes I go out and just seal large canes, and honestly, I haven't noticed any difference. So, you know, I'm sure that if there's people listening and they feel strongly about it, that I can really tell you with all these roses, even now, I will still cut a really large cane, and I will go get the Elmer's glue, but I have not noticed a difference that cane borers have done any different. I've not had any more of a problem with insects or cane borers, whether I use Elmer's glue to seal the canes or whether I don't. Why? Just think of all the work and all the time that I spent sealing canes when really I have not noticed one bit of difference. I'm sorry, Mr. or Miss Glue Manufacturer, but I'm just telling the truth.
What about using rubbing alcohol between each cut to help prevent diseases? Do you do that? And if so, what is it straight alcohol? Is it, you know, one part alcohol to how many parts water? What do you recommend?
I only do that I've only had crown gall, which is just terrible. It looks, to those of you who have never had a crown gall, it's something that if you ever do, you'll know it. It just looks like a tumor on the plant. And I had it on the most magnificent first prize. That was the name of the rose. And the roses were the size of a plate. And everyone will tell you, well, if you have crown gall, that's it, your plant. Just dig it up, burn it, get rid of the plant. Done, your plant's finished. But I decided, someone had told me, you know what, a technique, and I did it, and I saved that plant. So I removed it just like a surgeon. I removed the crown gall, and I took alcohol, just like you said, and I brushed it on with a pastry brush on my little plant, you know, like to disinfect the spot. And then I disinfected my clippers. And now I'm not telling anyone like, oh, go out and do this. I'm just telling you what I did because I wanted to see if it was possible. And the plant, when I left Texas, was still producing the most beautiful blooms of first prize. And I didn't dig up first prize. I have to say that I cured it because the crown gall didn't come back. So I had just read that someone else had attempted to surgically remove the crown gall. So that, I'm just letting you know that I do, if there's been some kind of a disease that I think is really bad in the garden, then I always clean my clippers and disinfect them when something, you know, I think might be infectious is in the garden. That's what I do, but I keep them clean.
Another tip that I was taught is, as a general rule, when you're cutting back any stems, they should really be stems that are basically thinner than the thickness of a pencil. So is that a rule that you also follow?
If you want stronger, especially in hybrid teas, and if you show roses, one of the people that I knew, he was a former president of the American Rose Society, Don Ballin, and he was magic with roses. And if you want all your energy to go into producing a few stellar roses that could possibly be a queen or a king, and you want to just make sure that that energy of the plant is directed to a few canes, then you want to remove all the spindly, weak canes that might take and sap any, you know, you want to redirect the focus of the plant. So say I was going to enter a show and I knew approximately how many days it would take to grow, oh, say a Neil Diamond or a Moonstone. Say it took 36 days. I would, and I knew a rose show was going to be in June. I would count back approximately so many days, and I would remove all but maybe three or four, and I would look for a swollen bud eye. I mean, there are people who could do this, and they know exactly how many days it'll take to produce that perfect rose. So, yes, if that's your goal, but if you want just a beautiful rosebush shaped like a vase and you just want a prolific, you know, profusion of blooms, then just what do you want? Do you want a beautiful rose bush or do you want to produce a few magnificent roses? Think about it and then decide what you want that bush to look like, because you're going to have, based on how you prune that rose, you could have four canes on that bush that have roses the size of plates, or you could have a bush that has lots of blooms with more color. You see? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It really does depend upon what you're looking to achieve. Susan, once again, it has been a pleasure having you on the show today, and I look forward to having you come back very soon. You are definitely my favorite Rosarian of all time. You are so loved by so many of the listeners, the emails and the comments on social media. People just really love all of your work, especially the pictures that you share with our listeners. It's just been a pleasure having you back on.
Thank you so much. It's just a joy to talk with you and to share this passion together. You know, thank you. And I hope if anyone has any questions, I hope they'll check out the Gaga's Garden website too. I'll be sure to answer.
Thank you so much, Susan. And folks,
thank you
for tuning in. Check out the companion article, which will be available on theorganicview.com, as well as the information that Susan has on her website, which is gagasgarden.com. Have a great afternoon.